President Dr. Dan Phelan joins us from Jackson College. Good time to get an update. As they said, there the spring semester has been underway now for a couple weeks, but as we like to say, Dan, never too late.
Exactly right. We've got so many options for our students, Greg. And, of course, we'll have fall registration starting on June 15th. So if folks want to hold off on the summer a little bit, we certainly have the capability to serve them for the fall semester as well.
So, Dan, we're seeing a lot of plans from the universities coming out here, especially this past week. Michigan State today, Michigan State, Michigan are going to do pretty much the same thing the way I'm reading it. And I know you have a task force looking at what you're going to be looking like in the fall.
We do, Greg, and have been monitoring, just like you, have been monitoring what's happening nationally and what's happening at community colleges nationally. And I'll tell you, it's just a broad continuum of ideas and suggestions. And at the end of the day, nobody really knows. And so what all of us are doing as executives of community colleges and universities is doing our best work and having plans in place. And as you had indicated, I put a request together to create a reintegration task force, which is at the college, about a dozen or so folks working together, really smart people who are helping us to think about how we reintegrate, and including a lot of good guidance from the CDC, from federal and state departments, certainly from the governor's office, making sure that we're in compliance with all of those elements. And this reintegration task force will be finalized by the end of July. And I'll be reviewing that with my leadership team and talking with our board of trustees about it. But the core of it is going to be, at least for now, unless we get different guidance or different direction, is that the predominance of our work right now, of course, for the spring-summer semester is online. And it is our intention to do the same for the fall semester. That being said, we are also doing a lot of design thinking principles in our work and deploying prototyping of various programs, particularly in the health and medical sciences and potentially in the lab science as well. So we actually are engaging a lot of safety and health protocols across our institution in these lab sciences. We've begun first with the nursing program, and bringing back our students who weren't able to finish all their clinicals and simulations. We recreated a pretty interesting simulation related to COVID-19 in our Rowell Simulation Center there and at the main campus, and actually walked the students all the way through the program wearing full PPE, engaging in respiration work, and engaging in healthcare maintenance and responding to emergencies. And our students did very, very well. We're taking the learnings of all of that. We're having a follow-up and a kind of a post-hoc analysis of what we learned from that. And then our next step is going to take that information and deploy that in other nursing and medical sciences like respiratory therapy, for example, and some others. And so we'll build slowly on and learn from each one of those and cascade it to further lab and nursing lab and allied health labs, and continue to bring those back. How far we go is going to be really dependent on Mother Nature and how this virus goes and how quickly available a vaccine will be available.
Yeah, it's hard to, I guess, virtualize lab work, isn't it, Dan?
It is. You know, there are some pretty sophisticated software programs out there, Greg, that give a 3D dimension and a pretty realistic element to it. But there are some where, you know, if you're going to intubate a patient, you really have to feel what that's like going in. To engage in venule puncture, you really need to do that on another individual. So we realize that we really have a strong quality education program, and making sure that our students are ready and that they have those hands-on experiences are important. So that's why we are focusing on allied health and medical sciences first and get those labs going. And the lecture stuff, Greg, we're doing online. I mean, that's pretty easy to do. Our faculty have been just great in taking all of their ground-based courses and putting them into an online environment. And certainly the rest of the college, from business office to financial aid, taking all of that work, Greg, and putting that up in a virtual-based environment, that's gone extremely well. And we've been working really hard on communicating with our current students really regularly, our parents, and the community as well. And it's going really well. I'm just so honored to be working with the good quality employees we have at the college and helping us really transition, but being very thoughtful, very safe, and maintaining high-quality education at a really affordable price.
Any way to assess yet, Dan, how the students are handling this, or is it too early?
Well, actually, Greg, as part of our reintegration task force work, we have actually surveyed our employees. We got that data yesterday, and we are conducting a survey of our students right now. We'll get that data here in about a few weeks, and we have a lot of anecdotal information, and, you know, some are really anxious to get back in. They want to be able to do that. And others are saying, no, I'll wait a little bit. So it really is based on the risk tolerance that individuals or perhaps even their parents have. But the nice thing about the Jackson College is we're right close to home. You know, we are really adaptive. We can accommodate a lot of different things. We can turn on a dime. So if we're able to bring back ground-based courses sooner, we can do that really quickly. But the safety of all of our employees and all of our students are our highest concern when we make decisions.
Unlike some of your peers, you have an expanded housing program. How is that going, or how will that be handled, Dan?
Pretty good, Greg. In fact, a couple of days ago, I got a report of planning effort from our housing team, and we have a few students on campus now. For whatever reason, they're with us. They might be international students, or it may not be the best environment at home, or their wards of the state, things like that, they don't have access to internet. We're looking at a couple of different plans right now. One that says we have a 25% population, and that would basically be one student to a four-person suite or a one-person to a two-person suite. The second is a 50%, so that would be about 200 students, the first being 100 students. The second would be two students in every four-person suite. That gets us to about 200. And then, of course, full of deployment would be 100%, and that'd be about 400 students or so. I suspect that we're going to be somewhere in the middle grade, probably, until there's that kind of herd inoculation, or we have access to the vaccine. I suspect we'll be at the 25% or 50% range.
So you don't suspect anything back to normal until there is some sort of vaccine?
You know, Greg, we've talked a lot about that, and you know, we're really focused on our principles of safety and compliance and those kinds of things. We have to put the safety of our students and our employees first, and so we're going to do that in a very thoughtful manner. And you just can't control human behavior. You know, people are going to move around, they're going to engage and connect with other people, and it comes down to, you know, a level of trust. How much do you trust people to have a engage in a culture of responsibility, and that I'm going to be safe in everything that I do, or I won't forget somewhere along the line. So we believe that we've got a quality educational product online, and we will do the ground-based courses and stay on that plan at least until January. We're thinking at this point where we believe that a vaccine might be more readily available. So we're thinking we've got a good quality education program online. It's not just something you took on ground and put up there. Our faculty have really done a good job to make sure that the online experience is really meaningful for them.
Dan, are you surprised that it looks like both Michigan and Michigan State will bring students back for the fall semester?
It is a little curious. You know, we each have to make our own decision for our own institutions. Of course, those two institutions tend to be pretty well resourced and have lots of staff that, you know, can engage in testing and tracing and have resources to spend on the tests themselves. I was looking at a group yesterday to do testing, and it's $100 a test, and it's like a financial audit. It's just one moment in time. So you take the test of get the test of a student today, and tomorrow they might have gone somewhere and contracted the coronavirus, and you don't know unless you test them again. So that we're talking about a lot of money that you could put down the drain. I was talking with some university presidents across the country on Tuesday, and you have one university president I was talking to, and they're planning for $500,000 worth of testing for athletics alone. So we just don't have those kind of resources. So we have to be very judicious about how we deploy our resources, and we have to think about how we scale across the whole institution. I mean, in some of those universities, they're you know, 40, 50, 60,000 students. And, you know, with us around 7,000, 8,000 students, I mean, even for us, that would be a financial hit that we would much rather focus on the quality of our education and safety of our students rather than spend a lot of time doing testing and so forth. And so if we could just be a little bit patient and think about, you know, waiting for a few more months, we think that all will be better served.
What about your athletic program, and what is the league looking at, Dan?
Well, we're actually looking at, we're working with two different groups, the NJCAA, the National Junior College Athletic Association, and then the Michigan Community College Athletic Association. I was on a conference Zoom call here a couple weeks ago with NJCAA. They have not made a decision and will not until June 15th. However, at least I took away from the Zoom conference that they're leaning for wanting to get play going again, and the MCCAA has not made the decision either. I suspect that that will follow NJCAA. But regardless how they go, we're going to have to run our own race. I talk about it at our own campus. We're going to have to figure out what we want to do and what's safe.
Right.
You know, some are talking about not having any fans anywhere, and then really rigorous testing for the athletes. But then you're also talking about kind of controlling their life and kind of managing where they go and what they do and don't do. And, you know, we don't want to impinge on too many freedoms, but we also know that young folks want to play. So we're going to be sorting that through after we get the guidance from both of those two, the state and the national organizations.
Yeah, you'd have to have some sort of testing apparatus, right?
Absolutely. In fact, some of my peers that I've been talking to, they're talking about contact testing every day.
Yeah.
And some are talking about a baseline test when you first come in, temperature testing, and then some kind of interview about where you've been, what you've done. At the college, we've actually developed our own inventory, kind of a questionnaire that's, I think, a 14-point questionnaire that we're looking to deploy for not only student-athletes, but students generally and our own employees. But how far you go with that, who does the testing, how all that happens, how that unfolds is yet to be seen quite yet. You know, we got some taste of that, Greg, as we've been doing this prototyping with our nursing program. So we've had representatives there from the hospital, our clinic on campus, and working with our staff to try to see how that happens. And so we're getting a really microcosm view of what this looks like and what the costs are for full PPE and the various levels of testing, and then the documentation. Of course, you've got to maintain HIPAA compliance standards and those kinds of things. So there's a lot involved, even for when you're dealing with maybe 60 nursing students, you know.
Sure.
So each time you kind of move the rings out, the concentric rings out a little bit, involve more students, you're adding significant more cost and more coordination. And thinking about how you bring that to scale is something we're really grappling with.
You had certainly a good partnership with the prison. Is that on hold now?
No, actually, you know, Director Washington, State Director Washington of the Michigan Department of Corrections has just been a great partner for us. We continue to provide corrections education programs to the various prisons in the state. Of course, they're dealing with their own bit of coronavirus, but
sure.
Having this education program is a nice distraction away from the fear factor, so to speak. And our faculty continue to work really well with them and the various prisons. We have got pretty good safety protocols in place, so we're all doing everything by paper as we have been doing. But now our faculty can't go inside the walls, obviously, so we're exchanging a lot of paper, a lot of homework, paper-based homework back and forth, and making lots of trips to the various prisons throughout the area. But we're getting the job done, and we're serving students in the process.
Dan Phelan with us from Jackson College. Dan, is this a damage your bottom line there, and what's the board looking at?
Of course. I think that no organization, higher education or businesses or nonprofits or hospitals, for that matter, are going through any of this without being financially damaged. You know, there's the issue of loss of revenue, certainly, which has been a big part of it. We also have other expenses that we didn't anticipate, so purchasing PPE and literally thousands of gallons of sanitizer and cleaning wipes and all kinds of things, plus the staffing costs to come in and clean regularly. So
yeah.
we're seeing really high numbers on that. But I have been working with our Board of Trustees. We've got a number of levers that we are putting in place. For example, we have really pared down our expenses as far as we think are viable. We also reached out to our employees and asked for volunteers for furloughing, and we got about a little over 30 employees who have volunteered to do that for a couple months, so that's going to help our bottom line. Next week, we're getting ready to offer a voluntary early buyout for individuals who are close to retirement. So we're putting that in place. We've also, Daryl Norris, who heads up our financial arm, has been in a really good job of maintaining our finances and helping us to manage expenses. We've also reached out and have a $10 million line of credit, which require board authority before we could use any of that. We've got some really strict protocols on how we move through the organization. Cash flow, of course, is a big area of focus for us. So we're doing lots of things to kind of manage it. But, yeah, it is a hit to the bottom line for us in a pretty substantial way. We're believing that because of the quality of education we provide and the availability and the work on some ground-based lab courses, that we're going to see a fairly good fall enrollment, perhaps not as strong as we've seen in the past. But we're hoping that the fact that it's local, it's safe, we're accommodating, that we're really focused on student safety and flexibility. We think that that's going to appeal to students, dislocated workers, parents, and the like. And we're also believing that because we're very inexpensive, that students won't opt to take a gap year, that in fact they'll pursue their education and make good progress for courses that will transfer to Michigan, Michigan State Central, or wherever at a later time.
Yeah. For those interested in the Jackson College experience, are counselors still readily available, Dan?
Absolutely. All of our student success navigators, our admissions officers, they're online all the time. We also would encourage people to go to the college's webpage. We have a kind of a chat bot on there, so interactive chatting in the lower right-hand corner. They'll see a little kind of a question cloud. Just click on that, and someone will be able to connect with our students or potential students or even parents for that matter and get answers right away to them. So, we're very much available to students, whatever questions that they have. Also talking to them about how some of the federal aid is available to them. Some of the CARES Act funding, we're trying to get that up and going. We get new guidance from the federal government all the time, so we get ready to launch a plan and then it changes. So we're hoping to get that money out the door for registered students to support them in their educational pursuits here fairly soon as well.
Dr. Dan Phelan with us this morning on WKHM. Dan, as always, appreciate the visit. Go Jets!
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Greg. Thank you.
Take care.